Okay. All right. So this is Eric, and he introduced himself. I'm the other part of the A team. My name's Mike Silverstein. I bring greetings from Pastor Paul, Heidi's in Shreveport, Louisiana, with some of her friends, I think. And Paul is out hiking with his brother Rick's son, JR. Many of you know JR. And Carolyn Billington's son, I think his name is Gary Billington, and Bob Trankler. So many of you know where they are. And he sends his greeting, and we're keeping an eye on the house. So if you want to come later for a party, they left us the keys and everything. They're very trustworthy. So, but it's very kind of them because we don't have any place to live. So that's sort of been our life. But we're privileged to be here, Susan and I. We've been, I think, since about June 1st, we've been traveling, and we've been, I don't know, a lot of places. I know where I am today, so that's the important thing. And it's just a privilege to be here with you sharing. I know Paul called me. We were in Haiti, and I'm texting everybody. Many of you out there are getting texts from me in Haiti, and Paul's like, I know that you're texting me, but you obviously are not getting my text back, because Paul doesn't have an iPhone yet, so... If you're thinking of a gift for him maybe for Christmas, you could move him into the 21st century because he could use that iPhone. But so he finally called in Haiti, and or he called somebody at Mercy Ships in Texas, and they had a number for the team leader in Haiti. And he said, well, I'm going to be out of town. Would you like to preach today? And I says, sure, we would try that. So it's my first time. Sort of a pinch hitter here. So a couple of things. I think the first thing, I'm just going to tell you a little bit what I'm going to tell you about. I'm going to talk a little bit about Mercy Ships in general, and then a little bit about our new home, the Africa Mercy. That's the ship that we're going to be living on for the next 2 years. Some about we had a six-week onboarding training in Tyler, Texas. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. And then a little bit more about our field service in Haiti. How many of you have been to Haiti? I know there's a few of you back there. Well, it's gotten a little better, but it hasn't gotten any cooler, let me tell you. It's pretty hot. And then I'm going to do a short teaching from Matthew 25. Many of you have heard the parable of the talents. So it's, you know, it's kind of a well-known story, but it kind of hit me when we were in Haiti working. So... two quick notes. Some of the West Hills people who have been here for a while, it's a long story, but we get to Haiti and Gami Ortiz, some of you know Gami, used to be the music minister here. He is the program director at Nehemiah Ministries in Haiti where we were serving. And him and his wife Kathy are there with their four kids. And he's just a cool guy. He's just a nice guy. And he came... he's actually, I think he's in Michigan now. He was having, I think, knee surgery done here, and his four little kids were there, and he's quite an interesting guy. So it's just a small world. He sends his regards to all of you. And then the other thing I want to kind of caution you about, right now it's noon in Haiti. It's an hour ahead on Eastern time. And the church at Nehemiah Vision Ministry is worshiping right now. And... just a few things about it. It's hot. It's probably 100 degrees in the church. There's no air conditioning. It's a concrete floor, concrete walls, steel ceiling, loud music, really loud music. The second Sunday, I wore earplugs, and the Haitians, I had these big orange earplugs, and the Haitians were like, oh, this guy's kind of weird, you know? But and it's kind of cool because you're sitting there, and there's like maybe 300 people, and I think they went out and they said, let's see, we need somebody to design the most uncomfortable benches that you can imagine. And I think they did. I mean, they're like made out of boards with rebar. I mean, steel rebar is how they make them. So it's really comfortable. And it's kind of cool because you're sitting there and then like chickens come walking down and turkeys. And there's like the animals are in and the kids are with us. And it goes on, well... I don't know exactly when it starts, but I think they said it started at 9:30 or 10, but you get there at 9 and they're going, and they go to about 12:30 or 1, so it gets to be a little bit long. But So just count your blessings. You have air conditioning, you have soft seats, and I guarantee you, you'll be out of here before two or so. So just be thankful for that. So what I'd like to do is I want to start with a little bit about Mercy Ship. Some of you know a little bit about it. Some of you may have seen it on 60 Minutes last year. They're going to be featured on 60 Minutes, I think, later this year, as well as the BBC. But Russ, if you're ready, go ahead. Mercy Ships has been around for about 35 years. It came out of YWAM. Some of you might be familiar with Youth with a Mission. And they actually split a number of years ago because of potential liability with the ships and the YWAM ministry. So at one time, they operated four ships, Mercy Ships. They had one called the Caribbean Mercy that went around in the Caribbean and a couple of others. Currently, the only ship they have is the Africa Mercy, which is now sitting in the Canary Islands. It's finished with its dry dock, and it's passed all of its certifications, and it's getting ready to sail, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. They're going to be heading down to West Africa. So one of the cool things going on, though, is Mercy Ships is building a second ship. From the 60 Minutes program that aired last year, they picked up like $40 or $50 million. And they have a new ship that we've been praying about. I think they've actually started construction on it. I know it's been in the design phase for at least 6 months, and it's being built in China. And there's not too many hospital ships, so it's kind of like, it's not a simple ship to build because there's just not many hospital ships out there, and it's sort of like a one-of-a-kind thing. So one of the things of Mercy Ships is our mission, and we always say our mission is that we're following the 2,000-year-old model of Jesus, bringing hope and healing to the poorest and forgotten people of the world. West Africa, the countries that Mercy Ships serves, are the poorest in the world. There's about 10 of them from Ghana all the way down through Benin and Congo. And it's some of the conditions. A number of the people in our class have already been on the ship for a while, so they've told us kind of what's going on. All of the services provided on Mercy Ships are for free. The only requirement is that the person has a medical need, and from what I understand, there is more than enough need to go around, and that the ship can fulfill that need, because as state-of-the-art as we are, we only do certain types of surgery, and we've had advanced teams in Benin, West Africa now for several months, and on September 9th, they call it the screening day, which is apparently a very powerful day. This is when people are told to come, and they'll be lined up for 3 miles, they say, waiting to be seen. And they send triage teams out, and they look at the people and determine who they can help, and it's like 1 out of 10, maybe. And they give them numbers and appointments as to when to come back. So there's more than enough need to go around. And they've been to Benin before, and they'll probably be going back. Some people require, I mean, this young man with the legs, multiple surgeries. It didn't happen in one time. So they do some pretty remarkable things. Russ, can you bring up that first slide of the Congo, the statistics? I don't know how well you can see that. That's actually I actually took a picture with my iPhone. That was at what they call them community meetings that we had every Thursday when we were in Texas. And this is like the statistics when they were in the Congo, the last field service from September of 2013 through June of 2014. So they were there, I'll just read them to you, a total of 297 days they were in country. They performed a total of 2,524 operations, breaking down 1,085 eye surgeries, 76 obstetric surgeries, 477 general surgeries, 601 like cleft lip and palate type surgeries. And here in this country, if you had a cleft lip and palate when you were born, probably within a few weeks, they would have fixed it and it'd be no big deal. They actually have doctors coming because they want to see how they do this on adults because it's so not heard of in this country. And I got to put my glasses on too. They do a lot of training. They had 556 people in healthcare education, 5,385 therapy sessions. And this blows my mind. I was trying to figure out, well, how many dentists do we have? 19,081 dental procedures in 297 days. Most of the dental work happens off ship. We set up, they call it a Hope Center, and in the country, not far from the port, but they do a lot of dental things there. So they do a lot of incredible things. And can you bring the picture up of the ship? That's the Africa Mercy. Not probably the best picture of her, but that's going to be our new home. I think our cabin, and I have to be careful here, we're about midway back. We're in cabin 4321 if you want to give us a call. We have an 800 number, and it's kind of strange. The ship from an ISP address, because we have full Wi-Fi and email and texting, looks like it's in Florida, offshore of Florida. I don't know how they do it, but there's a lot of things I don't know how they do. And I'll say this now, this whole thing shouldn't work. I mean, the more I find out about it, the more I understand it, it's God, because this just can't work the way, it's just counter everything that you've ever thought of. So she's about 20 years old, the Africa Mercy. She was built as a car ferry, and then it was transformed, and they took the car ferry level out and made a 72-bed hospital. It's currently the largest non-government, non-military hospital ship in the world, 600 feet long. We sleep about 450 crew on the ship. We have six state-of-the-art operating theaters. We have a CAT scan and an X-ray, no MRI because the metal ship, they explained that, why that wouldn't work. There's a pharmacy, there's a library, there's Wi-Fi, and Starbucks is a huge supporter of Mercy Ships, and so we have the only Starbucks on the continent of Africa on board the Africa Mercy. Keep in mind, most of the crew members are younger than our children, so we'll get to that too. We also carry 25 Land Rovers, not like Land Rovers you see here in DuPage County, but like real Land Rovers with, you know, snorkels and winches and for going into the country. I'll be doing a lot of in-country work, taking teams every day to hospitals, orphanages, nursing homes. So it's pretty cool there. And then I was looking at some other statistics. We serve over 2,000 meals a day on the ship. Got to feed all these people, and we have a number, 200 day workers, they call them. They're not really paid. They get a meal, and they get a little, like, transportation stipend, they call it, and they come on the ship, and they act as translators primarily. Susan's going to be responsible for just, like, 100 of them working in the hospital. I'll have a couple of them that will translate and guide me around and things. And so we have all these numerous offshore ministries. There's an agricultural team that's there, just a whole bunch of different things. And we also have a little security force on board of Gurkhas, if you remember the little Gurkhas, the Nepalese special force people. And they're supposed to be the nicest people in the world till you do something wrong. But they guard the gangplank and access to the ship and off the ship. And they're supposed to be very cool guys. Everybody on the ship pays to be on the ship. We all pay our own airfares, our own room, our own board, except the Gurkhas. And I was told that there is a donor somewhere in the United States that pays all the Gurkhas' fees to be on the ship. So some of you, there's some people have brought up some security issues, and I know I went through some of you saw pictures of me in fire suits and training like that. When they sail, they do have pirate watch, they call it, and because we're on the east side of Africa, not the west side, but there's still some dangers involved, and they've been doing this for a long time, so they've thought of most everything there. What else? Let's talk about some of the people. If you can give me the next slide. Oh, that's not a good slide. You must have taken that one, Susan. Oh, that was given. This is our onboarding team. It doesn't look really good here. This is the group of people that we trained with, including some of our teachers, instructors, and people like that. But so we arrived at, they call it the International Operations Center. Why you would run a ship from the middle of East Texas, I don't know, but that's where we do it from. So we got there on Friday, June 6th, and we had been there once before, so we kind of knew what the place looked like. And they took us to our room, which was 10 by 12, including the closet. And we're like, could you step over here so I can open the closet, and then you can go back and sit down. So it was, I guess, supposed to get us used to the cabin on the ship, but it was pretty small, and there were like about 40 of us. We shared two, you know, men's bathroom and a women's bathroom, two washing machines, and we got to know each other pretty quickly. Russ, if you give me another one. This is Susan's. We were also had small groups that we attended. This is her with her small group. And then one more slide. This is also part of, this is kind of the whole team in the main dining room at Mercy Ships. And we had a big celebration luncheon the day before we left to go to Haiti. So most of the people, like I alluded to, are young. I think the two youngest people are 21. One's a Wheaton College young lady. She's a teacher on the ship. And fourth generation missionary. Very interesting story. And we also had three-year-old, well, we called her Izzy, Isabella. She's from Canada. And yeah, she was the youngest. Like, at 3 years old, she'd be the, and her brother was seven. And I'm never going to bed, ever. And then it's like, I'm never leaving Haiti. And the mother's like, oh yeah, we're going to leave Haiti. Don't worry. So yeah, it was kind of interesting traveling with a three-year-old and a seven-year-old. And we had people just in our group from Canada, the U.S., the U.K., Switzerland, France, Holland, Australia, and South Africa. Several families. There's a married couple from the Chicago area. He's an auto mechanic to keep the 25 Land Rovers going. And his wife's a nurse. And a couple with their two, I guess they're both teenagers, maybe 11 and 12 and 15, and she just turned 16, all the way from Australia. They left their older daughter at home to go to college, and everyone has a story of how they got there. It's just, you know, there was the God calling them story, and then the God getting them their story, and God providing for them. It was pretty cool. The people from Australia, he told me his airfares for the four of them were $18,000, because he had to get from Australia to Texas to Haiti to back to Africa. That's just one way. That doesn't get him home. And he says, we didn't have any money. And but they're there. And he also told the story. He was going to be the ship also has a school, because there's about 70 children on board that are children of crew members. And it's a fully accredited school. I think there's 17 teachers and like 70 children, fully accredited. And he said that he had decided he was going to interview to be a teacher on the ship. And he said that they actually flew him. They didn't fly him. He had to fly from Australia to Texas for this interview. And he got out of the interview, and they told him, well, we're sorry, but we don't think you're the right person for this job. And he's like, well, I just spent, you know, like $3,000 or $4,000 round trip to get to Australia and back. And then he said that there was another man there who was also interviewing for the position, and they gave him the position of the teacher. And this man, in turn, turned around and gave him $2,000 to cover part of his airfare, and he was blown away. And then, I guess he got an email or something. They said, well, we're really glad you came, and we're sorry you wanted to be the teacher, but would you like to be the principal on board? So him and his family are back, and just crazy stories. Nothing like this should work, but it works, because it's all about God. It's unbelievable. So what we did when we were in Texas, we had classes basically from about 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon every day, even half a day on the 4th of July. We had some weekend things. We had small group meetings. We had to read several books. We wrote papers. We worshiped, we prayed, we had to meet one-on-one with the chaplains, and we also learned about a lot of the departments of how they do things at Mercy Ship. There's about 250 people who are also all funded by somebody to be in Texas to run this huge organization, and it just keeps going on. But so we learned about the different departments in Mercy Ships, and then we took French. And we took French. And mon dieu, we took French. And we had French apps, and we had French lessons. And I don't think we have French yet, though, but we're working on it. So they speak French in Benin. They speak French in Haiti. And we need to study our French. So if there would be one prayer for us, I would say that it would help. But we had fun too. We had a lot of fun. We had barbecues at staff members' houses. We went to different people's houses for desserts, and then they took us on the weekly Walmart run because we were kind of out in the middle of nowhere. That was the only place to get stuff. So we go to Walmart once a week. We had a fireworks. They took us to a place for fireworks and swimming. And we learned nothing about our jobs. We were there 6 weeks. Not once did anybody's job come up. And I was like, this is kind of weird. I'm thinking, you should be telling me what I'm going to do, don't you think? And nope. We learned what they called kingdom principles. We learned about cultural differences, about a lot about our own personality profiles, about conflict resolution. There's 450 people living on this little ship, and there's conflict. Particularly, we're kind of lucky because we'll have our own cabin, just the two of us with a bathroom, and many of the people live eight to a cabin, four bunk beds, and more females than males, so eight young women living in a cabin together, working together in the hospital, eating every meal together, and you can get on each other's nerves, right, Susan? Yeah, I got on your nerves a little. Yeah. Just once in a while. But anyways, we prayed a lot. We did a lot of praying. We laughed a lot. We cried. Some of us more than others. We struggled a lot. Just a number of different times. People are getting calls from home, and some people don't have money. Because like maybe a supporter that they had dropped off, or this one woman in particular, she's going to be a chaplain on the ship. She doesn't have her funds, but they just keep coming somehow. And we became a community. And, you're like in the shower with them, you're brushing your teeth with them, you're eating, you're just with them all the time. So the time at first, like, wow, this is going to take a long time, this whole deal. And then it started to be both kind of slow and fast. And then all of a sudden, we're leaving for Haiti. It's July 16th. And I thought, boy, this team's really ready to go. Not everybody went. The managing director of he's taking over. He has, I don't know, how old are they? 2 4-year-old twin girls and a 6 and a 7. I mean, they didn't come to Haiti, but they'd already been to the ship. And so there was about 30 of us that went to Haiti. And so we had to get up at 2:30 in the morning on July 16th, and we were in the vans rolling to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport at 3 a.m. We arrived in customs, and we're waiting in line, and Penny, you were with us in Haiti. I think you're the only one here from when we went a few years ago, and I don't know if you remember me saying, I said, I'm never coming back to Haiti. I really don't. I love Haitians. I don't like Haiti. It's just not a comfortable place for me. And Paul, when he found out we were going to Haiti, he was just cracking up. He was, like, really enjoying it. And so we get to Haiti, and we're standing in line, and it's, like, 100 degrees in the airport, and we're waiting. And we get up there, and I give the guy the passport, and he puts it in the machine, and he says, have you ever been to Haiti before? And I was like, yes. And then he goes, do you love Haiti? And I look at Susan. Susan's like, I'm like, yes, I love Haiti, I'll love when I'm going the other way. But so I wasn't too thrilled about going to Haiti, but it was great. And so the first thing that happened is we each had one bag, and, we're traveling with 30 people, and there's one bag missing. One girl, this Canadian girl, no bag. And the airport's really small, and it's crowded, and I'm like, well, let me go try to help. And then they wouldn't let me in. And then I call her Frenchie, the French teacher, because she spoke French. I'm like, Frenchie, come with me. We got to get this bag. Couldn't get through. And then we come back, and I said, you need to pray for this bag. Everybody's got their bags. We've been sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, except this one bag. And then, like, we walk back through, and it's like, well, there it is right there. It was just there, sitting just by itself. It was like a silver bag. It was a very unusual bag. And it was like, okay. So God came through. And then we boarded our limo. And in Haiti, a limo is like a 5-ton truck with a cage on the back with steel benches. And actually, there was more. There was like 54 of us on this thing because there was our group and some other group came in from Indiana, I think. And they were with us. And we hit the streets of downtown Haiti at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's like, wow, I forgot how poor this place is. Poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It's unbelievable. Unless you've been there, you can't imagine. So we rode in the back of this truck for like an hour and a half, and we get to Nehemiah Ministries and we meet Gami. Hi, Gami, how are you? Oh, West Hills. And so it's like old home. And Nehemiah Ministries is pretty sophisticated compared to some of the places from before. They generate their own electricity. They have three generators. Their biggest expense is diesel fuel. He says it costs $12,000 a month to keep the lights and the air conditioning on and all that stuff. They purify their own water. They process their own sewage. They maintain a 24-hour security perimeter with armed guards. And it's pretty amazing. And that's just the ministry, or that's just the organization. The ministry, they run a school. 200-plus kids come, and they had vacation Bible school and English camp this past few weeks. They give the kids a little breakfast meal, and then they give them a lunch meal before they go home. And for many of the kids, that's all they're going to get. We also, I'll get to the food in a little bit. They operate a medical clinic. Susan worked there a little bit. They have a church, and they don't call it an orphanage. They call it a children's home because it's almost impossible to adopt anybody from Haiti. The government's really cracked down on that. So they have, I think it was like 9 boys in one house and 9 girls in another house. And so different people, we worked on different things there. I worked on the security wall. It was quite a hoot. Do we have any pictures of that, Russ, of the wall? Oh, that's everybody watching TV. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go to the next one. This is Marine or Sea Survival Training. A certain percentage of the crew has to be certified in wearing these survival suits and launching life rafts. And we also did fire safety. Some of you saw I had to go into like a burning cargo container with the full outfit and hose. I think there's an oxygen. Yeah, there's them in my little resuscitation unit or whatever you call it. But let's see. That's Frenchie on the far right, and that's Susan in the back. And they're having too much fun for lifeboat drills and things. But we had to practice putting on life jackets and things. Go ahead, one more. So this is where I want to be. So now we're in Haiti. And let me say that this organization, there's only 4 non-Haitian people that work there, Gami and his wife, Kathy, and Brian, and I forget his wife's name, from Indiana. Everybody else is Haitian. They employ about 60 Haitians. And they have a few summer interns, some college, primarily girls during the summer that come and do things and work in the school. And then they have these mission teams like us. We were 30 and we were there for 2 weeks. Most of the teams were like 10 and 12. There was a team from Washington. They were there for a week, a team from Pennsylvania. And So it's a difficult place to live. I think some of you got texts from me. We hit a record high. I think that last Monday we were there, it was 114 degrees and 50% humidity and a sun that just wouldn't quit. It was just hot. And we complained, at least I did, I don't know. We complained, everybody did. We complained a lot about like the food and the lack thereof of food, because it was kind of a joke. We had rice and beans, or beans and rice, and rice and beans and rice. And breakfast was oatmeal cornflakes with warm powdered milk and peanut butter and jelly. And lunch was rice and beans, or beans and rice. And dinner was, you know. So we complained about that. And then, like some of the Haitian guys that I was working with out on the wall, well, they only get like 5 meals, 6 meals a week. So they're only eating maybe once a day. And because we would go and it's like, well, it's rice and beans, I'm hungry, and you'd stick your plate out and the girl would like literally give you a little bit. And then the Haitian guys came and they were like stacking their plates pretty heavy. And then it's like, oh, okay. So you get kind of convicted really quick, is I guess what I'm getting at when you talk about the food. Again, the Haitians are great. They're happy, they're smiling, they're just having a great old time, and it's pretty cool. But it's just a difficult place to live. It's come a long way since we were there before. So what were you saying, Susan? The wall. Oh, here's the wall. You can see we're kind of like in the middle of a desert area. There's nothing around there. And one of the things we learned is we don't want to do anything for the Haitians that they can't do once we leave. So we're building this wall. They've been building the wall for 3 years, I found out. And the way I calculate it, because I'm pretty good with numbers based on, I think it's going to take them about another 9 years to finish it, assuming they don't buy any more property. But it's all done by hand. We shoveled stuff into the mixer by hand. We carried the stuff from the mixer and all that. But they did have a Caterpillar backhoe. They had a lot of equipment. And I'm like, well, so we're going to dig this trench. Well, why don't you just bring the backhoe in and we'll just take out this 3-foot trench, you know, for the footing? No. We do it by hand because they don't have a Caterpillar backhoe when we leave. So they did it with, we did it. I didn't do much, to be honest with you, but with picks and axes, and the ground is like concrete. But that's how they do things. So just to give you an idea, we were there 2 weeks. There was 7 Haitians and 5 or 6 of us on any given day. I think we built 50 feet of wall. It's 8 feet high and 50 feet. And so, like I say, maybe another 9 years, they'll get it finished. But they don't seem too concerned about it. One thing we learned, they're all about relationships. They're not about getting things done. Every morning you had to come up and shake hands with everybody. How you doing? Bonjour, comment allez-vous, blah, blah, blah. And then they want to talk, and then they want to sing, and they want to dance. And, you know, it's like 99 degrees already. It's like, we need to get started here. But, and then it's like, well, we're out of gravel. And, you know, you don't call up Home Depot and they don't come over and deliver. You know, it's just, okay, so we're going to go sit under the tree for a few hours. And then, well, we'll go get some gravel. I got to get the keys to the truck. I'll be right back. And the guy comes back like an hour and a half later, you know. And it just, that's how things work. But at the end of the day, they all go home happy. And they work with each other. And they're just like the happiest people you ever met. They're just great. And most everybody there is a Christian. This one guy believed in voodoo. That we worked with, and it was kind of interesting. We couldn't communicate very well with him, but he was a voodoo believer, and the rest were Christians, and they all get along. So I wanted to start. Can you bring up the Bible verse, Russ? I want to get into the reading. I want to preach a little bit on Matthew 25, 14 through 30. You all know this verse. Or you should, most of you know it. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold. Some people call it talents. I prefer the word talents. To another 2 bags and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more bags. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, and he dug a hole in the ground, and he hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and wanted to settle the accounts with them. The man who received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. So he brought 10 bags back. He said, Master, here, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with many things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied again, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, this is what belongs to you. I'm giving it back. His master replied, You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned it, I would have at least received it back with some interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So I've, you know, I've read this, I've heard this probably a lot of times, I've heard sermons on it, and I'm like, so why this parable? What's this all about? And the first thing, you know, if you have like a red letter Bible, I have a red letter Bible, that means it's Jesus' words. And so this is Jesus himself speaking. He's telling this parable, and he's telling it to his disciples. So what's he getting at? And I'm thinking gold, you know, it's like, okay, business, take it, put it in the stock market, you know. And it's probably that as well, but I like to use the word talents. Some, this is an NIV version, some versions call it talents. And it sort of started getting in my mind. Remember I told you when we were in Texas, nobody told us anything about our job. Nothing. And, well, we had nurses, maybe 8 or 10 of them, I don't know, in the group. And, well, I figured they knew how to be nurses. They probably have a license. And we had some several, 3 or 4 teachers. Well, they had licenses to be teachers and stuff. And this guy from Chicago, the auto mechanic, I don't know if he had a license, but obviously knew how to fix things. And we had a marine mechanic from Canada who worked on cruise ships before. And I figured he knew what he was doing when it came to fixing engines and things. And, you know, so there's all these different people. And but it's not about that. That's not what was, for me, it wasn't what was going on. I'm talking about we've all been given talents, and I'm not talking about like nurse, doctor, teacher, you know, some of these things you learn, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm what they call kingdom principles. I told you we learned a lot about that. We're talking about things that I would call like somebody who's an encourager, or somebody who's a prayer warrior, or somebody who has the gift of hospitality, or like a provider, or maybe a listener, a helper, sort of like, and I'm a training guy, so sometimes we call them hard skills, like learning how to like operate a machine would be a hard skill. Learning how to be a good listener would be a soft skill. So we're talking more about the soft skills, and we all have them. Every one of us has them, and some of you have more than others of you. I know many of you out there, and I know what some of your talents are. And some have more and some have less, but it's not a matter of how many you got. Okay, remember, the guy with 5 got 10, the guy with 2 got 4, the guy with 1, he didn't get any because all he brought back was 1. So we all have at least a couple, and it's kind of like, so what are we going to do with these talents? That's what we're talking about. We've all been given talents, and how do we use them? So let me go back to Haiti, because I remember one of the group leaders, he says, well, you know, we can do more in 2 weeks in Haiti than you can do in a church in 2 years in terms of helping people to grow and maybe get closer to God. So let me tell you, we get there. We're tired because we've been up since 2:30 in the morning. It's hot, in case I haven't mentioned it. And it's really hot. And we get there, and then we get to like the don't drink this, don't go here, do that. You know, sort of the rules of the place. Don't go outside the fence because it's dangerous. And, you know, all these different do's and don'ts. And we're like, ugh, you know. And it's, we're just sweating. And it's, you know, it's pretty bad. And so then I think you saw that there was a picture of a, like our dorm that was the men's dorm with red sleeping bags. Lord knows why they gave us sleeping bags. But it was so hot we didn't need those. But so then they handed out like sheets and a towel, you know, and it's like, okay, so go find yourself a bed. So I go in the room, and I'm in a dorm with like literally 50 men because the place is full. They got a full complement of volunteers. Like 40 of them I don't know. You know, I only know like the 10 that are with us. And Susan's in the women's dorm like for 14 nights, you know. I don't think we've slept apart for 14 nights ever. I'm not sure. Maybe 7 or 10, but and then this bed, it's like, well, it's a homemade wooden bunk bed with a little plastic mattress, and it's the mattress is like hot when you put your hand on it because it's so hot in there. And it's a concrete floor, and it's a canvas roof, and there's bugs, and it's dirty. It's not pretty. So I start making my bed, and I put the sheet on, and then I open this towel, and I should have brought the towel. I left it in Haiti. It's like I opened it. And it's like Swiss cheese. There's just like holes all through this towel. And literally at that point, I'm ready to cry. I am ready to cry. It's like, why am I here? I said I never come back to Haiti. And now I'm here and the conditions are like really, really bad. So then I want to introduce you to a guy named Scott. Scott's maybe 25 years old and he's a little bit out there. He's kind of got like the hair like with the mohawk and he's from Philadelphia, I think. And he had been on the ship for a couple months and kind of an introvert and, you know, a nice guy. And he had shared some issues that he's had in the past with us. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm like this towel and I'm like ready to cry. And I turn around, I might cry now. And this guy, Scott, is on his knees alongside his bed on the concrete floor praying. And I'm like, okay, so we're convicted again here. And it's like God told me, well, it's not about me. It's about what we're going to do for him. It's not about me. It's not about like my towel and my sheet. And this young man at 25 years old, he's got it. Turns out later, before we left, we like drew names out of a hat. A lot of times on mission trips, you know, you'll pray like your secret prayer buddy or whatever he called it. Turns out he was my prayer buddy, but I didn't know that until about 10 days in. And so we used to have these meetings every night. We had devotions and some worship and I don't know. Can you bring up, well, that's my friend Walter, by the way. He's from South Africa. He's the technology manager on the ship. He runs the Wi-Fi, and he's got six people that work for him. And very nice guy. At least he's a little closer to my age than a lot of them. But we lost some of the pictures here. But anyways, so Scott's telling me at this devotion, he gets up and he says, you know, I decided that I wanted to pray for the kids in the school today. And there's like, I think there was like 193 kids plus like a bunch of teachers. And he said, he got up and he talks like, dear Lord, thank you so much for this day. I mean, that's how he is. He's just a very simple prayer, but I really appreciate him. And he goes, I prayed, not like, oh, I'll pray for you. I'm going to pray for you and that you would be blessed and that you would know God's love. You know, not to them, but just over them. Every kid, every teacher. And then he said, sometimes after a half hour, I didn't know what to say. And then he says, and I was exhausted. I'm like, this is all I'm doing. It took a lot of concentration. And he said, I'd call on the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit would tell me what to say. And the Holy Spirit would give me the strength to do it. And I think at the end, everybody was like hanging with our mouths hanging open. This is what he did. And so he would have the talent of prayer. In a very simple way, not very like cool prayers with lots of big words and stuff, just basic simple prayers. And then this is kind of a funny story. Susan's going to look at me, put the filters on, Mike. That's what Paul would say, but I'm going for it. So I did devotions one time. We're only there 14 nights, but the French teacher was supposed to do them, and she got sick, and the lady that was responsible for setting it up, she said, Mike, could you do devotions? This is like at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Will you do them tonight? It's at 6:30. I'm like, well, okay, sure. You know, and then I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? And I'm like, get the Bible, and I'm thinking, and I spend like 2 hours putting this thing together. And then we go to dinner, and then the group leader, this guy Stefan, he was from Mercy Ships in Texas. All he does is lead mission trips. He's out there. He's a character from Germany. Germany won the World Cup, by the way. He told everybody in Haiti that Germany won the World Cup. We're driving in a truck, and the United Nations were passing this truck with the United Nations troops in the back, and they got Argentinian, you know, I'm from Germany, and we won the World Cup. And it's like, this was like his thing, but he was a pretty funny guy. But anyways, he comes up to me like at 6:05. He says, Mike, I need you to... The devotions tonight, I want you to do this, and I want to have this happen and this. And I'm like, but it's like 6:05, Stefan, and we start in 25 minutes, and I spent like 2 hours, you know. Okay, take care of it. That's, you know, he was German. That's how he was. So I'm like, okay. So I'm like, and I go in the bathroom, and the bathroom was a men's tent that was a bathroom, and the women's tent was a bathroom. And I walk in, and I mean, they actually had air conditioners in the bathroom, and there was showers and toilets and things. And I walk in, and who's there? Scott. And Scott's sitting on the floor with a yellow tub washing clothes, because I wash my clothes in the shower every night. That's how most of us did it. But he washed his clothes in this little tub. And I used to call him Little Buddy. I says, "Hi, Little Buddy, how you doing?" "Oh, good. How are you, Mike, Mom?" I says, "You know what? Could you pray for me?" He's like, "Sure. What do you need?" I says, "Well, I'm doing devotions in 20 minutes, and I don't have a clue what I'm doing. Stefan changed the whole thing on me." So he's like, "Okay." Now remember, I'm in the bathroom. So let's just, I'm in the bathroom doing my thing, and he's on the floor with his clothes, washing his clothes, and he's praying. And I finish what I'm doing, and I turn around, and he says, "Okay, you're good." I says, "Yeah." And it's like God gave me the verse and exactly what to say. And so he's just an incredible guy. So the talent that I think they were trying to get to us, that we don't need to know about our jobs, because we all kind of know what our jobs are, it's how do we bring the body of Christ together? How do we bring, you know, Natasha's talents and Penny's talents and, you know, all, everybody's talents together to work together to glorify him? So then there's this other woman. Her name was Laura. She's 37 years old. She's a nurse from Salt Lake City. She works for the VA, or she used to. And her father was a physician. And when she was like 11, I think she had cancer. And they removed a 9-pound tumor from this woman at 11 years old. And we met her, and she's kind of like a withdrawn, quiet, introvert, you know. And then I remember her saying, "I got my first computer to come to Mercy Ships. I'm 37 years old. I bought my first computer." And she was kind of like a plain Jane, you know? I mean, she was just, and she kind of stayed by herself a lot. And somehow this woman became like, you can ask Susan, I'd be on the ground crying. She would have us laughing so hard. We had gone to a Dairy Queen in Texas with her, and it was just like a comedy of errors, and we were ordering ice cream, and she started up. So she started a thing called Dear Diary. Every night after devotions, we would cheer. "What do you have for us tonight?" Because, you know, we're tired, we're hot, we're maybe discouraged. And she would, like, she'd pick on the food, and she'd pick on, you know, and for her, she had her birthday when she was there. They made her a cake of rice and beans with a candle on it. But, you know, besides Susan, without Scott and without this Laura, I wouldn't have made it. You know, I could do the job, but, I, you know, just emotionally, I couldn't have made it. And every person on the team had some sort of talents, and I think what happened at first is a lot of people were thinking, "Oh, Natasha, you sing really well. I wish I could sing." And we started going, "Oh, well, you can do this and I can't do that." And it was sort of like, "Well, that's what you got, but what about me?" And like, "Eric, you're playing the piano pretty good. I've never even met you till today." Like 10, 15 years ago, I decided I was going to play the piano. I wanted to learn how. We went out and bought a piano, and I took lessons for a year or two with Miss Johnson in Elmhurst, and you know what? I can't play the piano, you know? It ain't happening. That's not what I do. I don't play the piano. But many times we focus on what we can't do, and I think in schools, sorry if any teachers out there, personal opinion, we focus on, like, the kid's weakness rather than the kid's strength. So let's focus on their strength, what they can do. So a couple other people, we used to go to a church in Elmhurst years ago, and there's a lady, her name is Dot, and we share the same birthday, January 23rd, except she's like 93 years old now. And we used to call her the cookie lady, because this lady always made cookies at church for the VBS, for the school. She was just cookies. That was her talent, you know. And I just remember one day in April of 1994, on a Thursday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was at home and she showed up. I was having like one of the worst weeks of my life. And she showed up with these cookies. And I'm like, "Okay, I don't need any cookies." You know, I used to weigh more, some of you know. I says, "I don't need any cookies, but it's really cool that you're here." And she says, "Oh, a little birdie told me." And she gave me the cookies and she left. And so here we are 20, 30 years later, whatever it is. But that was her, that's her thing, that's her talent. Not so much the cookies, but knowing who needed the cookies and when. Because I found out that I wasn't the first person that got like a surprise visit from the cookie lady. So she was pretty cool. And then going back to Haiti, you all know Susan, and Some of you know a lot of us got sick, you know, on top of everything else. You know, you don't want to get sick in Haiti, but I was one of them. And but we're in separate dorms, and during the day, even in the dorms with the air conditioning on, it was like 97 degrees inside. There's no place to hide from the heat. And we were told, drink water, drink water, drink water, drink water. And I was telling Andy last night, the first few days, particularly when we were working outside, 10 liters a day we were drinking. I mean, the water would just go right through you. And we had several of the nurses, their jobs were to come around and like pester you, are you drinking water? Because you can get behind really fast. And we saw one lady from another team who got really sick from not drinking. But we got sick from other reasons. But anyways, and Susan, I didn't even know she was doing this. She would take care of, I don't know how many were sick, you know, more women than men, because there was more women than men, but she would bring them ice and water and, you know, listen to them and care for them. And at the end, we had a big sort of meeting on the last night, and so many people were, you know, touched and moved by her compassion for them. So that would be her talent, okay? She doesn't come up here and speak like I do. That's what she does. We don't play the piano like Eric does. So everybody's got the talent. So just getting back to me, my talent, one of my talents, nothing to do with Haiti. This is like about 16 years ago. I felt God was calling me to visit sick people. And I started going to hospitals and ERs and ICUs, and I would pray for people. I'd go early in the morning, Elmhurst Hospital, 5, 6 in the morning, and go in and pray for people. And I've been with many of you, I think, in hospitals now. And when I'm looking around out here, yeah, Mr. Morrison, and just a lot of people. It's a privilege for me. And I would never have thought that that's what I was going to do. Oh, and Ms. Shuki's, yeah, a lot of people now I'm looking. Some people I don't even remember after a while, but you know, that's what I do. That's my talent. I can walk into the intensive care unit and just minister to people there. So that's one of my God-given talents. And then here's Julene. You raise your hand just so they know who you are. That's our friend Julene. We've been friends for almost 40 years, I guess. And she's got a talent. And she started sending, I call them inspirations, devotions, Bible verses, whatever you want to call it. She started emailing like 6 or 7 years ago, she told me. It seems longer. And I figured out that's like about 2,000 days in 6 or 7 years. And she says she has about 100 people on her mailing list. Every morning, I get an inspiration from her. And Susan gets one from her, and her mom, or mother-in-law, I'm sorry, gets one from her. And you know what? Many, many of these days, they're just a smile. It's just nice, you know. But there are some days when she hits a home run in me. And I'm sure there's other days where she hits home runs in other people. But this is what she does. We've been all over the world. We get them all over the world, sometimes in different times and things, but we get them. And I think maybe on one hand, I can count how many times we didn't get them. And I think it was like a technical, not that you didn't do it, it was some sort of technical glitch with the computers or something. But that's her talent. And I know many of you out here, you know, some of you better than others, and I know what I think some of your talents are. And it takes all of these talents, you know, to make the body function, and that's why God gives us these talents. And again, it's not a matter of which ones you have or how many you have. It's a matter of how you use them, and if you use them. Hopefully you use them, but how you use them. So the point is for you to use your God-given talents to advance the kingdom until Jesus Christ returns. Because when we were reading the Bible verse, the guy talking is Jesus. It's like, I'm giving you this stuff. I'm going away. I'm leaving you with the keys to the kingdom. I'll be back. Not telling you when, but I'm coming back sometime. And when I come back, I want to see what you've done with what I've left you with. So in Matthew, earlier in Matthew, in the gospel, in Matthew 5, Jesus, this is 5:15, I'm sorry. Jesus says that no one ever lighting a lamp hides it under a bushel basket. Most of you are familiar with this verse also. But by putting it on the lampstand, it gives light to the whole house. So I would say, let your talents, let your life shine to his glory. Do the things for him. Don't worry about what other people are going to say or think or how you're doing it. Because in the end, and if any of you are non-believers, this isn't for you. If you want to talk about a relationship with Christ, we can certainly talk to you about that later. But we're believers, most of us, and we're going to heaven. And when we die, we know where we're going, okay? And when we arrive, assuming Jesus doesn't come back first before we die, but when we arrive, my prayer for myself, for Susan, for each one of you, is I want to hear Jesus say, when he looks me in the eye and he puts his arms around me, "Well done, my good and faithful servant."